hand, but he's not done with Ren, not by a long shot. Stupid boy, you've finally gone and done it then. Fucked yourself over beyond measure. No more prissy posh school for you now. You're finished. You're heading straight for military school. What's the date? Ren asks. His father jerks back. What? What's the date? Today's date. Come on, you read the paper every day. You must know. Don't be obtuse. Of course I know today's date. It's the 17th of March. Ren feigns surprise. Oh, cool. And what happened on the 4th of March, Father? I don't know. Lots of things, I'm sure. The 4th of March. He stops short. His face goes blank. Yeah, that's right. Good old 4th of March. You forgot your children's birthday again, didn't you, Dad? Only this time, you forgot our 18th birthday. Which means... Ren steps closer to his father, getting up in his face. He stabs a finger into General Jacoby's chest with every point he makes. No more orders. No more commands. No more threats. No more hanging military school over my head every chance you get. I'm an adult. I've come into my majority, and you're done talking to me like I'm some unpleasant thing you've found stuck to the bottom of your shoe. General Jacoby glows with rage. Fine. Then your tuition's finished. I won't pay for another thing, boy. That house you and your friends live in is mine. Ren spits. The deed's in my name, and I'll pay for my own damn tuition. I'll cover my own expenses. You can't touch a cent of my money, and you know it. He blows down his nose hard, nostrils flaring. Why don't you sit back down, old man? You're fucking embarrassing yourself. Spinning, he crosses the formal dining room, taking me by the hand and pulling me away. I guess he was angry about that comment after all. 32. Elodie. We escape Monmouth House with armloads of paintings and all of Ren's personal belongings from the attic. We check into the Hubert Estates County Inn, and Ren paces up and down like a lion, silent and furious. It takes 4 hours for him to calm down, by which point it's gone dark and my jaw is aching from clenching it so hard. At 7, Ren's phone starts ringing and it won't fucking stop. My sister, Ren grits through his teeth. She probably wants to scold me for hitting the fucker. She's always just tolerated his bullshit like none of it fucking matters. But it does. It fucking does. I know it matters. I'd say more, but there are so many fucked up things ping-ponging around in my head that I can barely think straight. My own memories are hitting hard. I feel like I'm trapped, walled in by panic. It wasn't you. It wasn't you, Elodie. You're safe. You're okay here. He's a million miles away. He can't hurt you. Ren has no idea how similar our upbringings have been. The only difference is that he's big enough now to stand up to his father. I'll never be able to confront Colonel Stillwater the way he did just now. And that makes me feel hopeless. The room we've checked into is beautiful, but neither of us has stopped to take in our surroundings. We've both retreated into our own little worlds. And I think it's going to take a while for either of us to return to reality again. Ren's phone shrieks again, his ringtone blaring out in the tense silence. I thought you never kept that thing switched on, I say. You're right, I should just turn the fucking thing. He cringes when he looks down at the screen. Fuck, she's messaging now too. Apparently he's gotten Harcourt involved. He turns the phone off. Shouldn't you check in if the dean wants to speak to you? Better if they all have a beat to calm down. Everyone's heightened right now. I'm trying not to be, but... He sits down on the edge of the bed next to me, lacing his fingers together, blindly staring down at his hands. I'm sorry, Elodie. I told you he was gonna be polite and charming, and he really wasn't. I don't even know what to say. I could tell he was in a bad mood, but I didn't think he was gonna turn like that. I would never have taken you there if I thought for one second that he was going to be that shitty to you. It's fine, Ren. Seriously. A few crass words from your dad aren't enough to affect me these days. I mean, Pax calls me a whore on a daily basis. I don't mind. Yeah, well. Ren's eyes harden. I mind. I really fucking mind, Elodie. Ren whispers. He's looked up now, but he isn't looking at me. His focus is locked on the window opposite the bed, which overlooks the hotel's swimming pool. Tell me what's wrong. Wrong? I blow my cheeks out, pulling my shoulders up around my ears. I mean, I just watched you put your father on his ass. That wasn't exactly a fun time. No, you're anxious. I've never seen you this jittery before. You're scared of something. And I'm hoping to God over here that it's not me. 'Cause if it's me, he laughs unhappily. I don't think I would cope with that very well. No, God, it's not you, I swear. It's just the whole thing. It reminded me of how things were with Colonel Stillwater back in Tel Aviv. Your father's a lot like mine. I guess it brought back some difficult memories. He nods, clenching his jaw. He's suddenly even angrier than he was a minute ago. I want to talk about something with you, little E, Ren says. I know now's not a good time, but I don't want to wait anymore. I thought I could keep my mouth shut until you came to me, but... He shakes his head. Oh, God. No. No, no, no. This is bad. Ren, I don't... I did a bunch of research on you before you arrived, he says stiffly. I checked your social media, dug up your school reports. It's severely fucked up, I know, and now that everything's changed between us, I feel like a fucking predator just thinking about it. This isn't news, I say. You already told me that you looked into me. I got over that a long time ago. We don't need to... Elodie, stop. Can you stop staring out of the window? You're beginning to freak me the fuck out. He bows his head, closing his eyes for a second. Only after a deep breath does he finally look up at me. I didn't tell you that I was also sent some official documents from Tel Aviv. I put in a request with a friend who lives out in Israel, and he sent me an envelope. There was a police report inside it. I go very, very still. What police report? Reality fractures, shatters to tiny pieces when he takes a deep breath and speaks again. The one that was filed the night they found your mother's body. 33. Elodie. 3 years ago. The metal chair creaks underneath me, the loud abrasive sound cutting through the tense silence of the small windowless room like a knife. The man on the other side of the scratched, wobbly table gives me a tight smile that doesn't come close to reaching his eyes. He looks like he feels sorry for me, but he doesn't quite know what to do to comfort me. He probably doesn't have kids. Probably unmarried, too. There's no wedding band on his left hand, which means he's probably one of those cops who's dedicated his life to his work. When all you do is focus on the bad shit people do to one another, it stunts your heart's ability to feel anything other than contempt and mistrust. Won't be long now, he says in a heavily accented voice. Someone must have told him that I only speak English. I nod, looking down at my hands, resting on top of the table. I was allowed to wash them after the photographs were taken and the forensic analysts had swabbed me, but I was so numb that I didn't do a good job. There's old blood, black now, still shored up beneath my nails. Dark crescents of gore that keep on reminding me of the surreal scene I came home to from school. Seconds pass. Minutes. The clock on the wall tick, 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 its hands marking off the unbearable stretch of endless time that I sit here at this table in my stinking clothes, feeling the emotionless eyes of the detective crawl all over me. Eventually, the door opens, and a beautiful woman, wearing high-waisted pants and a crisp white shirt, whirls into the room, carrying a stack of paperwork. She smiles at me. She has one of those soft, warm smiles that instantly makes you feel at ease, like she could be a friend.
Hello, Elodie. My name is Amy. It is a pleasure to meet you. I am sorry it has to be under such painful circumstances.
Not Amy, like the Americanized name. Amy, like the French verb to love. Her accent's wonderful. You can always tell when someone's new to the English language. They don't use contractions. It is instead of it's. I am instead of I'm. They aren't comfortable enough with the language to get lazy with it yet. She sits down next to her colleague, and a waft of jasmine water hits the back of my nose. I begin to piece together this woman's life as she flicks through the papers she's brought along with her. She's French, obviously, early 30s. She takes excellent care of herself, working out every day in private, behind closed doors, but never talking about it, as is the way of all classically French women. She drinks her coffee black, dipping her croissant into the piping hot liquid at her desk each morning. She loves children, but she's never found the time to have them. She'll make a good mother one day, if only she can settle down long enough to find someone and fall in love. She loves to be outside. She loves to live by the sea and craves.
Elodie? Yes, there you are. Good girl. Come back, she says, her warm brown eyes full of emotion. I know this is hard, but I need you to try and focus for a little while, okay?
I jerk my head up and down.
I was asking you if you could tell me what happened, please. The officer who found you at your house said you were not making any sense when he...
She can't even say it, so I do it for her. My voice creaks and cracks as I push the words out of my mouth.
When he opened up the box. Yes, Elodie. When he opened up the box.
I don't remember what I said to him, I tell her.
Yes, that is understandable.
She's perfunctory. She manages to hide her horror well. That could be why they chose her to come in to speak to me. Aside from the fact that she's a woman, and she has kind eyes, and she shares my mother's nationality. Points that they probably figured would help me open up to her.
Do you think you could start at the beginning for me?
Everything's so confused. My thoughts are all tangled together, like an unspooled ball of wool. I pull memories through my hands like I'm searching for the end of a string, but it just keeps going and going.
I can't really. Okay, it is okay.
Amy reaches across the table, touching her fingers to the back of my hand. The contact startles me so badly that I reel back, knocking over the glass of water they gave me. The spilled liquid spreads across the table, running off the edge of its surface, dripping down into my lap. But I don't move. I don't try to mop it up. I just sit there and let it happen.
Merde, Amy hisses.
She runs out of the room and comes back a moment later with a wad of paper towels. Between her and the silent guy sitting next to her, they clear up the mess quickly, drying off the table. Amy gives me a bundle of napkins to pat my jeans dry, but I don't bother. I just hold on to them, my fingers rustling over the rough surface of the cheap paper. Round in circles.
Elodie, are you listening?
I snap my head up. Amy's back in her seat again. God knows how long she's been sitting there.
I cannot suggest what happened to you based on what we know at this stage, but I can read back what you told the officer. Do you think that would be okay? And then you can tell us if there is anything else you remember, or if there is anything you want to change. And don't worry, there is no right or wrong here. If you remember something differently, that is okay. You are allowed to tell us, and you are not going to get into any trouble.
I blink to let her know that I've understood. She cracks her neck, inhaling in and out a few times, as though she's steeling herself before she starts reading. And then she begins.
I came home at 6. He was already there at the house. My father. He was supposed to be away on maneuvers, but he must have come back early. I realized he was drunk right away. At least, I thought he was drunk. He was acting weird, staggering around and walking into the furniture. He wouldn't talk to me. I called out for my mom to tell her that there was something wrong with him, but she didn't answer, so I went looking for her. She likes to write letters to my grandmother in the back sunroom, so that's where I looked first. She was lying on the tiles there, covered in blood. She was on her stomach, and her skirt was up around her waist. I didn't understand what had happened at first, but then I saw the blood on her underwear.
Amy pauses, swallows, continues.
There was a hole in the side of her head.
Amy looks up at me.
What kind of hole, Elodie? Like a bullet hole?
Bile rises up the back of my throat. I'm apart from myself, outside my body, removed from this place and this situation. It's the only way I can give her the information she needs. But it means that I sound like a robot when I speak.
No, bigger. About the size of a golf ball. And her skull was. It had caved in around the hole.
Amy taps her fingernail against the table in a staccato beat. She stops when she notices me flinch. She goes back to my statement.
I screamed for Dad to get an ambulance, but I knew it was already too late. Her lips were blue. I checked for a pulse, though. I turned her over and put her on her back. I tried to give her CPR, but she was already dead.
I remember saying all of this. And the look on the officer's face, too. He looked shell-shocked by the things I was telling him. But I don't remember feeling this rising anguish rushing toward me like the inevitable end of a Shakespearean tragedy, refusing to slow or change its course. I know what's coming, and there's no holding it back. I wish I could.
That's when he came and grabbed me,
Amy reads from the statement.
He grabbed me from behind. He was so strong. I couldn't fight him, and I didn't think he was going to do anything bad. Not at first. But then he carried me over to the steel lockbox where he keeps his uniforms and his equipment. He handcuffed my arms behind my back, and then he put me inside. I kicked and screamed and I fought, but I couldn't get out. A long time passed. I thought I was going to die. He came back later and he seemed normal again, but he wouldn't let me out. He wouldn't let me out of the box. Amy stares blankly at the report for a moment.
Is there anything else you want to add, Elodie? Anything else that you've remembered?
Yes.
I have to say this now, while I am not myself. I couldn't tell the officer who found me. He was too young, too frightened. He'd thrown up on his shoes. This little room feels safer, though, and Amy doesn't look like she will puke.
Something happened. Something before he put me in the box.
The detective narrows her eyes.
Yes?
He did to me what he did to my mom. He forced himself into me, between my legs. He held my head against the tiles and he hurt me. I screamed. I tried to stop him, but I could see my mom. Her eyes were still open and she was looking right at me, and that's it. That's all I have. I don't fall apart. I just run out of steam. I can't continue.
Amy looks at me, her lovely brown eyes boring into me, and a single tear wobbles on the end of her eyelashes. That single tear is more than I've shed for myself since I escaped from that lockbox. It seems wrong that she gets to be the first person to cry over how terrible this nightmare is. She knows it, too. She quickly bats the tear away, clamping down on her errant display of emotion.
We need to get you back to the hospital. I don't think they conducted a rape kit.
Shame sets me alight. I try to shrink in on myself, trying not to imagine the humiliation that is to come.
Just a few more questions and we'll get you out of here. What day was that, Elodie?
Yesterday, Friday. It happened after I came home from school.
Amy pales, the color leaching from her face as she glances down at the report in front of her. She doesn't appear to be looking at anything in particular. Her hand trembles, and she quickly tucks it under the table and out of sight.
Do you have any idea what day it is now, Elodie? She asks in a quiet voice.
Those endless hours in the dark, cramped into a ball, my joints screaming in agony, begging me to stretch out, with my nose pressed against those tiny holes. They felt like an eternity, a hell that spanned full lifetimes. I know how the mind plays tricks, though. Hours feel like days that feel like years. I've been here at the station since 3 a.m, which means it must have been around midnight when that officer cracked the lock off the box and released me. My brain balks at the idea of tackling the simplest of mathematics, but I force myself to count off the hours on my fingers.
It's Sunday, I tell her, the early hours of Sunday morning.
You think you are in the box for 9 hours, Amy whispers.
I look from the female detective to the man sitting next to her, back and forth, trying to work out the complex expressions they're wearing.
Yes?
The guy's face creases into a mask of horror. He clears his throat, but it sounds more like he's choking. He pushes away from the table, bolting for the door.
Jesus Christ, I can't. I'm sorry. I need to get some air.
The door makes a quiet shh as it closes behind him. Amy sits back in her chair, rubbing nervously at the base of her throat.
We cannot continue this interview without two detectives present, Elodie. I'm sorry. But you should know, you were not inside the box for 9 hours. Today is Tuesday, my love. I frown at that. That doesn't make any sense.
Tuesday?
She nods.
I was in the box for 5 days?
Aimee looks away, covering her mouth with her hand. 5 days. Pissing and shitting on myself. Gagging on the smell of my own filth and the reek of my mother rotting on the other side of the room. That thin straw poking through the hole in the box, providing my only supply of water. The tiny pinpricks of daylight blazing against the back of my eyes, and then the darkness creeping in. Rinse and repeat. Did it all happen that many times? Did that many days really blur into one another? How could I, could anyone survive something like that without losing their minds? But then again, have I kept mine? Aimee leaves the room and comes back again almost immediately carrying a jacket. She places it on my shoulders, wrapping me up in it.
Come on. I know this will be hard, but I'll be with you, okay? I won't leave your side, I promise.
We aren't even out of the building when the military cops show up, in full uniform and armed to the teeth. A man I don't know with 3 stripes on his arm stops Aimee in the hallway, thrusting a piece of paper at her.
The girl needs to come with us, he clips out.
Amy's horror-stricken. Her eyes wide, mouth hanging open, she shakes her head, tucking me into the side of her body, as if she can protect me from what's about to happen.
This girl has been sexually assaulted and tortured, Sergeant. She's not going anywhere with you. I'm taking her to the hospital.
The sergeant sidesteps in front of her, blocking her way out of the building.
I'm afraid that's not possible, Detective Berger. This young lady is a minor and an American citizen, and she was witness to an accident that took place in a building owned by the U.S. government, which is technically U.S. soil. Israeli police has no jurisdiction here.
Accident? Her mother was murdered, and that building wasn't on your base. It was on Israeli soil. It doesn't matter who owns it.
Take it up with your chief. We have our own way of doing things, Berger, and we have our own police. We've investigated the scene and deemed Mrs. Stillwater's death an accident as a result of an unfortunate fall. You understand, Colonel Stillwater is a very well-respected man. There's no way he would have laid a finger on his wife.
Amy's mouth works. She can't seem to find the words she's looking for.
Your precious Colonel Stillwater raped his own daughter. What kind of man does that?
Not the kind that commands thousands in the U.S. military, Detective Berger. I'd be very careful if I were you. Repeating slanderous accusations like that can have dire consequences.
The sergeant's hand closes around the top of my arm. He pulls me out of Amy's grip. She reaches for me, grabbing. But it's no good. I was already far beyond her reach before these guys even showed up. She just didn't know it yet. I don't know what happens next. The world begins to shrink in on itself, darkening around the edges. The next thing I know, I'm falling forward, legs collapsing beneath me, and the ground is rushing up to meet me.
34. Elodie. I saw that police report once. It was very detailed. Incensed by the way the army handled my mother's death, Detective Aimee Berger petitioned the Israeli government to try and pursue the criminal case in-country. But the whole thing turned into a political nightmare. Her hands were tied, and so she could do nothing but sit by and watch as the military swept the entire thing under the rug. My father was exonerated of any wrongdoing. I never received that rape kit, and my mother was buried without ceremony in the back of a Jewish cemetery, even though she was Catholic, in a country that had never felt like a home to her. I wasn't allowed to attend the funeral, and my father sure as hell didn't go. I do my best not to remember any of this. Remembering only makes things more difficult. But Ren's sitting next to me, holding my gaze with steady green eyes, and he has questions. I resent that he's dredging this up. Most of all, I hate that this whole time, the guy I'm insanely attracted to has known this horrible, dirty, dark, evil secret about me that no one in the world should know. I thought the army police had that report destroyed, I say. They made sure to have all record of it expunged from the Tel Aviv police force's database. I know that for sure. Ren nods, picking at his fingernails. He attacks the very last chip of black nail polish that he's been wearing since the first night I met him, finally taking care of it once and for all. They kept a copy on their own system, he says. I see. I can't believe they sent you back there to live with that piece of shit, he says. Well, I was 14, and they'd decided he did nothing wrong, so where else were they going to send me? What about your grandparents, your mom's parents? Couldn't they have taken you? This is so futile. What good is trying to retroactively figure out a better alternative now, 3 years after the fact? It's all long done and dusted. My grandfather was already dead. My grandmother had Alzheimer's. She never really understood that my mom had died. I went back to live with my father, and that was all there was to it. It's just so. He flares his nostrils, his hands curling into fists. He looks like he wants to hit something really fucking bad. Did he ever touch you again? He growls. No, no, God, no. It was only that once. He never did it again. I think he was high on something when... the day that happened. I've had bad trips before, and I've never raped anyone, Little E. I've never fucking killed anyone. And even if that were the case, he would have come down the next morning. What possible reason could he have had for keeping you in that fucking box for 5 days? Going back into those memories means going back into that box, and I can't fucking do that. Slowly, I get up and move to the window. The sun's shining brightly outside, and everything is so green. The spring-like day contrasts so starkly with the gray, oppressive cloud that's descended over me that none of what I see on the other side of the glass feels real. I don't know. We never spoke about it after that day. I knew I'd wind up dead if I brought it up, and my father seemed content to pretend like nothing had ever happened. So I just did what I needed to survive. He started training me into the ground after that. Every single day, he put me through the most brutal training. I couldn't understand it at first, but then I began to see the self-loathing in his eyes. He wanted me to be able to protect myself from him. I think he always worried that he might do it again. I suck in a gasping breath, but it doesn't help. I still feel dizzy, like I'm going to throw up. Escaping Tel Aviv, being sent here to New Hampshire. I pretended to myself like it was an inconvenience, and I resented being dragged away from my friends. But honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It might not be the healthiest coping mechanism in the world, but I want to forget that time of my life, all of it, every single last day. So please, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I can't. It won't help, and... His arms wrap around me from behind. He holds me tightly, nestling his face into the crook of my neck. Shh, shh.
It's okay. It's okay. I'm sorry. Shh, please don't cry.
I hadn't even realized that I was crying, but I am. Desperate sobs punctuated with hiccuping gasps that echo around the hotel room. I used to lock myself in the bathroom at school during my lunch break and cry like this from time to time. I couldn't do it at home. Since he didn't have my mother to beat black and blue anymore, Colonel Stillwater had felt justified in laying into me during our morning gym sessions. Crying would have earned me the hiding of a lifetime.
I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry, ran chants into my hair. I'm sorry I brought it up. I hate that I've made you feel this way. I swear to fucking God.
Then why bring it up at all? I pant. Ren sighs heavily, the sound pure frustration. He turns me around so that I'm facing him, holding my face in his hands. He makes me meet his fierce gaze.
You've been through so fucking much, and you've done it all on your own. I wanted you to know that you aren't on your own now, and I want you to know that it's been taken care of. You don't need to worry about him anymore, Elodie. He's never going to be able to hurt you again.
You don't know that. You can't say that. I still have months before I'm free of him, Ren. You might already be 18, but I have to wait until June.
He shakes his head. Calm down, E. It's okay. I swear to you, it's been taken care of.
There's a tone to his voice. He says, it's been taken care of, but he's saying something else as well. He's saying that he's done something. He's somehow taking care of my father, and he won't be able to hurt me again. A knot of panic rises in my throat. Oh my God, what did you do, Ren? I ask carefully.
You knew I was a monster when you met me, Elodie. I've changed so much about myself for you because I want to be good for you. But there are parts of me that won't be denied, E. That bastard was a dead man walking the moment I knew how you felt. Once I saw my own feelings reflected in your eyes, I couldn't allow him to get away with what he did.
I don't even know what to say, what to think. None of this is making any sense. How I felt? Ren's mouth quirks up a little.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
He places my hand on his chest, right over his heart, laying his hand on top of mine.
I'm in love with you, and it'll be my fucking undoing if I'm wrong, but I think you're in love with me too, little E. Have I been deluding myself this entire time?
I'm in love with you. It's been taken care of. I'm in love with you. It's been taken care of. I look up into his face, the savage, beautiful kind of face that poets have written about for millennia, and the terrible fear that's been crouched in the back corner of my mind since I was 14 just disappears. No, you haven't, I whisper. I do love you. He exhales, his head dropping, his chin hitting his chest, and I can feel his relief.
Thank fucking God.
Ren, did you kill my father? He looks up at me from under those dark, dark eyebrows, and my breath catches in my throat.
No, little Lee, I didn't kill him, but I hurt him. I hurt him real fucking bad.
35. Ren. Mariposa used to tell Mercy and me stories when we were kids. She'd tuck us up in our beds and settle herself on a chair in the corner of the bedroom we shared. And then she'd begin whispering in a sinister, creepy voice that used to make my skin prickle with fear. Her goal wasn't to fill our heads with fantastical fairy tales that would infiltrate our dreams. Hell no. She wanted to put the fear of God into us, and the tales she told of hideous monsters and disfigured creatures were her way of trying to control us. The little boys and girls who fell foul of awful fates in her stories were always bad children. They didn't listen to their elders. They misbehaved. They were disrespectful. Never did as they were told, and they were punished severely for it. Mariposa had hoped that her tales of woe would teach us poor motherless twins a lesson, and we'd fall in line. Unfortunately, her horror stories only taught me one lesson: that the best way not to fear a monster was to become one. I'll tell Elodie anything she wants to know. If she wants every single little detail of what befell Colonel Stillwater the weekend I dragged Dashiell and Pax on a plane halfway across the world to help me take down that motherfucker, then I'll sit down with her and go through it step by step. I don't think she wants that right now, though. I think she needs to process the fact that she's free, and the secret she's been keeping no longer needs to gnaw away at her soul. She can walk out of the darkness into the light. And so help me God, I'll be ready and waiting there for her when she does. For now, the only question she asks is this: if this happened weeks ago, why haven't they said anything? Why haven't they told me that he was attacked? I tell her what I know, trying not to sugarcoat the facts. The first few days after he was dropped off at the hospital, they didn't know who he was. He had no ID on him, and his face was swollen beyond all recognition. Then the military police made the connection and moved him to an army medical facility. Your father was conscious there long enough to insist that he didn't want you told what had happened. After that, he was placed into a medically induced coma so he could heal. My contact says he can't access any further information without raising red flags, so that's all I can tell you. She nods woodenly, taking all of this in. After what I've done, I expect her to recoil from me, but she doesn't. We stay at the hotel until Sunday night, and I get far too used to Elodie falling asleep in my arms. It's the most terrifying, heavenly experience I've ever endured. I'm so fascinated by the sound of her slow, steady breathing that I hardly manage to sleep myself. The drive back to Wolf Hall is silent. It's not an uncomfortable silence, though. It's peaceable and content, and Elodie leans her head on my shoulder, watching the world fly by out of the window, rubbing her hand up and down the inside of my thigh. She gets closer and closer to my crotch, her movements becoming slower and more teasing, and I eventually have to pull off at the side of the road to adjust my raging hard-on. "You're fucking trouble," I growl, giving her a loaded sideways look. How's a guy supposed to concentrate on the road when a girl's millimeters away from rubbing his dick? I expect nothing of her. I haven't touched her since we spoke about what happened to her back in Tel Aviv. Not sexually, anyway. I've kissed her, and I've held her, but other than that, I've been waiting for her to make the first move. She makes it now, parked next to a stand of elm trees, by placing her hand directly on top of my cock and giving it a squeeze so hard it borders on painful. "Fuck knows how you're gonna concentrate when I have your dick in my mouth, then," she says. "Drive." I laugh. "You want us both to die?" She bites the tip of her tongue as she pops open the button on my jeans and slowly, suggestively, pulls down the fly. "I've seen how you drive. We'll be just fine. Just keep your eyes on the road, Jacoby." I've had plenty of roadhead in my time, but it's different with Elodie. That sweet, perfect little mouth of hers is so hesitant and gentle that it fucking kills me when she wraps her lips around me. And I don't want to kill us before we've had a chance at a proper life together, whatever that might look like. She slips her hand down the front of my boxers, her fingers fastening around my shaft, and she frees my erection. Her eyes go wide when she looks down at the swollen, glistening tip of my cock. "I'm not going to have to tell you twice, am I?" she asks. She's fucking sassing me now. I like that. Still, I take hold of her wrist and stop her from going any further. "I'll make you a deal. You let me eat your pussy on the hood of this car, and I'll let you do whatever the fuck you want to me when we get back to the academy. She looks at me like I'm mad. On the hood of the car? This car, right now, at the side of the road? She's never going to agree to this. Yes. Where anyone could drive past and see? Yes. And we could get arrested. Correct. Okay, fine. She fixes defiant blue eyes on me, daring me to fucking do it. She doesn't think I will. Boy, oh boy, does she still have a lot to learn about me. When I say I'm gonna do something, I damn well do it. Sweet. Pants off. I want your naked ass on top of that paintwork in the next 3 seconds, or I'm gonna make you wish you'd kept your hands to yourself, Stillwater. She balks, but only for a split second. Out of the car she gets. I follow behind her, poised to chase her around the car if she misbehaves, but she hops herself up onto the Mustang's hood and leans back on her elbows, giving me a tempting, teasing look that makes my balls throb. God, I want to fuck her so badly. You're just gonna stand there? She asks, her mouth quirking into a suggestive smile. I tuck my hands into my pockets, shifting to rest my weight on one hip. I'm waiting for those pants to come off. Don't mind me, though. You make for a very pleasing sight up there. Can she hear the ache in my voice? How far have I let myself fall? How bad is it gonna hurt when this girl finally realizes what a piece of shit I am and she tosses my ass aside? And why do I keep experiencing these moments of panic out of the fucking blue, like I'm only a hair's breadth away from catastrophe? I know the answers to the last question, though I pretend not to. Easier to pretend than to face that truth, that up until now, I haven't made for a very good, honorable, or kind human being, and this new skin I find myself wearing now feels like a pretty suit that I stole. It doesn't belong to me, and at some point, someone's going to want it back. It fits me, though, and I like fucking wearing it. I'm not going to take it off without a fight. The bright sound of her laughter makes me want to laugh, too. I'm sure you've had plenty of girls sprawled out across the hood of this car, she muses. I bite my lip, quickly shaking my head. What? No? She laughs again, the sound pealing high over the tops of the trees that flank the road. I don't believe it. I'm the very first. I move closer so that my shins are butting up against the fender, and I place my hands on the tops of her thighs. This may be surprising to you, but you've scored a number of my firsts, Little E. First girl I've ever taken home. First girl I've ever called my girlfriend. First girl I've ever loved. This last admission's a hard one. It catches in the back of my throat, not wanting to come out. I say it shyly, unable to look her in the eye. She sits up, delicate fingers stroking over my cheek, gently turning my face so that I'm looking at her. And we're in the same boat, she whispers. I've never loved a guy before either. I catch hold of her, pressing my lips against the inside of her wrist. First is a good start, I rumble. But I plan on being the only guy you love, Little E, period, for the rest of time. So greedy, she says, teasing her fingers through my hair. Her cheeks are glowing, though. I haven't seen her look this quietly pleased before, and it turns my insides into fucking jello. So greedy, I agree. What kind of fool would I be if I ever risked letting you slip between my fingers? I'm yours. I'll be your weak and pathetic plaything. You can use and abuse me how you see fit. I'll still be here asking for more. Speaking of which, I lean forward and kiss her. I'm still getting used to how I feel whenever I do this. Brimming over, too full, breathless, and dazed. She sighs into my mouth as I lay her back under the hood again. Her pupils are blown, the black swallowing the blue as I work at the button on her jeans, unfastening them and dragging them quickly down her legs. Second thoughts? Change of heart? I ask. She shakes her head. Get on with it, Jacoby. Don't you know how rude it is to keep a girl waiting? I pull her panties to one side, exposing her pussy. Ouch. And you know how much I hate being rude. She gasps when I sweep my tongue over her. It doesn't take long to have her panting and writhing on top of the Mustang. Her toes curl and uncurl reflexively as I tease the shit out of her, using light, purposeful flicks with the very tip of my tongue to drive her crazy. She shakes and shivers underneath me so beautifully that it's almost enough to make me weep. Fran, oh my God, fuck you. Fuck you. She knows my game. I want to keep her here like this, made vulnerable, trapped in a highly compromising position, and seesawing on the edge of coming for as long as I can get away with it. I might not be the cold, callous, cruel prince of Riot House anymore, but I can still be a bastard when I want to be. I dig my fingers into her hips and the delicious plumpness of her ass crushed against the car, and I bide my time. God, please. Please, please, Ren, let me come. Where would be the fun in that? Her whole body convulses as I laugh. She bucks her hips up, trying to earn herself more pressure from my mouth, but I lean back just far enough to frustrate her. Now who's being greedy? God damn it, she's delicious. I can't get enough. I run the flat of my tongue up in a broad, torturously slow sweep, and poor little Elodie whimpers like she's getting desperate. Not long to go now, though. I can hear the distant rumble of an engine coming up the road. Using the tips of my fingers, I prime her, dipping inside her pussy, enjoying the way she fists my hair and pulls on it just a little too much. My dick feels like it's about to explode, but I can wait. Please, Ren, she begs. God, please. I need you. I want you inside me so fucking bad. Closer. Louder. Whoever's coming up the road's almost upon us. I thrust my fingers inside her, sucking the slick, tight knot of her clit into my mouth, rolling it with my tongue, and she fucking screams. My mouth floods with the sweet taste of her. I fuck her with my fingers, driving them up at an angle, finding that trigger that will make her see stars. And that's when the Winnebago roars past us. The horn blares. Someone leans out of the window and yells something unintelligible, but I hold fast. Elodie bucks, startled, trying to cover herself, but I pin her by her hips, growling out a warning. Finish it, I command. Fuck my hand, Elodie, fuck it. I move fast, climbing her body. I press the heel of my palm between her legs, right up against her clit, rubbing her, and I pump my fingers harder still. Elodie's eyes roll back into her head. Oh my God. Her hips work. I stare down and watch, completely fucking mesmerized, as my little E grinds her pussy against my hand, her back arching off the hood of the car as she comes. I have never been this turned on in my entire fucking life. She reaches down between her legs and presses my fingers deeper inside her, driving my hand down onto her. Fuck, Ren, holy sh! Her legs pull up toward her stomach. She rolls onto her side, pressing her forehead into my shoulder, shaking violently as she tries to survive the nuclear bomb that's just gone off inside her head. Oh, my God, she pants. Oh my God. I dip down, nuzzling past her hair so I can kiss her neck. It's here that I allow myself a smug as fuck smile, but only because she can't see me. Shh, it's okay. She lets out a plaintive cry when I draw my fingers out of her. She falls onto her back, her cheeks adorably flushed, and blinks up at the patch of blue sky above us like she's still in a daze. Those people in that Winnebago definitely saw us, she says. I lay on my back beside her, resting my hands on my chest. Yeah, they definitely did. Laughing, she covers her face with her hands. How did that even happen? I was the one who was trying to be bad with you. Ah, Christ, this girl right here. I turn my head to the side, biting playfully on her earlobe. You should know by now, little E. You can try and be bad, but I can always be worse. Once she's wriggled her cute ass back into her jeans, we get on the road. She complains bitterly that I won't let her go down on me, but I know I'll plow straight into a fucking tree if I let her anywhere near me. I have to swear that we'll spend the rest of the night naked in my room back at Riot House in order to appease her. We laugh and joke as I gun the engine, eager to get back. Everything feels so light and fucking free. That is, until we're 30 minutes outside of Mountain Lakes, and I catch Elodie crying out of the corner of my eye. Fat, desolate tears course one after the other down her cheeks, and my heart seizes in my chest. Jesus, E, what the fuck? What did I do something? What's wrong? I will literally kill myself if I fucking hurt her already. What you did to my father, she stutters, fighting for each word. Fuck. Everything sinks. It was a risk. I knew that. I was prepared to deal with the consequences if she hated me for what I did, but the fear that wraps around my windpipe, choking me as I try not to veer off the road, feels like it'll be the end of me. You flew across the world, she gasps, on your birthday. Elodie, fuck. And you hurt a very dangerous man because he hurt me. I'm so fucking sorry. She takes my right hand off the wheel, lifts my arm, and scoots into my side, hiding her face into my chest as she cries even harder. Don't be sorry. It's the most romantic thing in the entire fucking world.
36. Elodie. 1 week later. The invite's black, flocked with a plush velvet design that feels like sin beneath my fingertips. The gold scrollwork etched into the thick card is gorgeous. I hold it up to the light, wondering when he slipped this under my door. Ren made no mention of inviting me to the party. There's chatter all over the academy about it, but for some reason, it hasn't even come up between us. The residents of Riot House cordially invite Miss Elodie Stillwater to their fancy dress party this Friday at their humble home, 8 p.m. Prizes for most creative costumes. No RSVP required. I hide the flocked card underneath a book on my desk when I hear Karina wailing my name down the hall. Elodie Stillwater, let me in immediately. I open the door. And there are dark circles under her eyes, which look puffy like she's been crying. She marches into my room and slumps onto my bed, groaning as she throws herself back against my pillows. Hey, whoa, what's going on? I clamber up onto the bed beside her, stroking her hair back out of her face. She screws her eyes shut, whimpering.
Andre, we're through. He dumped me.
What the fuck? What happened?
I don't know. Everything seemed to be going so well. And then, yesterday, he bailed on dinner. And then, this afternoon, I get this weird, vague-ass text telling me that he can't hang out anymore because his workload just tripled at college. Hang out anymore? Like we were just screwing around. He told me he was in love with me a week ago, Elle. How can a person fall in love and out of love in such a short space of time? That's a motherfucking record.
That's so weird. He didn't seem like that kind of guy.
I know. He isn't that kind of guy. Which is how I know Dashiell had something to do with this. I know it, Elodie. It's so like him to interfere and meddle in other people's affairs. He can't stand anyone else being happy.
Have you confronted him? Asked him if he said anything?
No,
she sniffs.
It wouldn't help. He'd just deny it anyway. That asshole. And all I want to do is binge Netflix and eat pizza. But I have so much work to catch up on, she moans. I'm going to have to pull an all-nighter if I want to get my English and my science projects completed for tomorrow.
You want me to come work with you? I'm really good at the whole moral support thing. She drags a pillow over her face, moaning again.
Please don't take this the wrong way, but I'm not the type of girl who wants to be around other people when she's hurting. I'm about to descend into a shame spiral of epic proportions. It's better if there are no witnesses.
It's surprising how well I can understand her with the pillow covering her mouth.
If you come and hang out in my room, all I'm gonna do is cry and rage, and that won't be a fun time for either of us. And I really have got to get this work done.
I take hold of the corner of the pillow, attempting to tug it down so I can see her face. But she slaps a hand down on top of it, pinning it in place.
I came to see if you have any spare highlighters. And Post-its. And Valium.
Yes, on the stationery. No, on the prescription meds, I'm afraid. She groans even louder. The pillow gets thrown across the room.
Why does no one in this school have any good drugs? Fuck recreational use. You'd think at least half of us were medicated for our very real anxiety disorders.
I can guarantee that someone at Riot House has the kind of chemical relief she's looking for. No way in hell am I suggesting she go knocking on their door, though.
It's gonna be okay, babe. Andre's a fucking fool if he doesn't want to be with you. And you're gonna ace these assignments. You're a bad bitch, no doubt about it.
She wrinkles her nose, teetering on the verge of tears again.
You're a good friend, Stillwater. Hang over the highlighters before I lose the will to live.
I give her what she needs, and she goes. I close my bedroom door, knowing that she was wrong on so many levels, hating myself for it.
I'm keeping so many secrets from her now that I feel like a goddamn monster.
And short of telling her that I'm in love with Ren Jacoby, nothing's going to change that.
Ren. You awake?
Me. Just about. You? Ren.
Nope. I text in my sleep. It's a problem.
Me. Funny.
Ren. You get the invite?
Me. Yeah. It was under my door when I came back to my room. You didn't feel like waiting for me?
Ren. Pax left it for you. I told him not to.
I stare at the message, the words stark and painful. I told him not to. Ren's been tight-lipped about the whole party, and I figured I was overanalyzing the situation. He doesn't want me at the party, though. After everything we've been through of late, that doesn't make any sense. Even if we had to steal kisses in dark rooms where no one would find us, I still would have thought he'd want me there. Something withers and dies inside me.
Me.
Wow. Well, that stings.
Ren. I don't even want to go to this thing, E. Believe me, it's gonna be a nightmare. I didn't want you to come because these things get fucking messy.
Me. What do you mean messy?
Ren. We play these stupid games. I'd love to say I'm innocent, but I'm not. I used to enjoy fucking with people just as much as Dash and Pax. Sometimes things would get a little out of hand. We've hazed people pretty hard in the past. That's what they're expecting from me this time, too.
Me. From you specifically? Just don't participate?
Eventually, he replies. Ren. It's not that simple. I owe Dash and Pax a lot. I wasn't alone in Tel Aviv, remember? I've put them through hell in the past, and they know so many of my secrets. Things I haven't told you yet. Maybe we should meet.
Now, it's my turn to tap out and erase my responses. I'm suddenly anxious. What kind of secrets can he possibly be talking about? And how bad can they be? My mind goes from naught to 60 in 3 seconds flat.
Me.
Are you supposed to hook up with girls at this thing? Is that why you don't want me there?
Nothing but dead air,